Welcome to the Nation Magazine Podcasts. You're listening to Nation Conversations, exclusive audio of Nation forums, events, seminars, and salons.
I've been saying that every article I've and book I've written over the last 15 years of doing this has been summarizable in four words: Republicans crazy, Democrats stupid.
Start with the crazy.
Right. Well,
crazy has come up a lot.
Yeah, it has. And just to kind of come at it from the way it's been discoursed about recently, in quite influential ways, there's an argument abroad in the land that Republicans are, conservatives are uniquely and newly crazy. And I think that, in fact, the things that we characterize as crazy about conservatives are pretty continuous through American history as long as the periods I've been following it closely. I would at least say since the 1920s, which is, you know, not coincidentally the time in which kind of the modern administrative state started kind of clinking into place. And Corey Robin, whose book The Reactionary Mind I find profoundly interesting, takes these points all the way back to the 18th century. It's very telling that Corey's book, in fact, there was a New York Times article about the debate over the book, which, you know, tells you this is hot stuff, received two very strongly worded negative reviews, one in the New York Times and one in the New York Review of Books, saying that this is absolutely wrong, that conservatism used to be marked by distinguished personages like William F. Buckley, and Ronald Reagan raised taxes 7 out of 8 years in which he was in office. I responded to that pretty directly in a piece. Right now I'm doing a weekly column for Rolling Stone Online, and said, well, look, you know, I took a book that I picked up at a used bookstore when I was in high school, and that's what I did for fun, in, you know, 1985, called The Marxist Minstrels on the Communist Subversion of Music. Remember that one? David Noble, right? Which was a sequel to The Beatles, Communism, and Hypnotism. Well, of course, this guy David Noble was this kook who, you know, like, you never heard anything from him again, right? No, of course, James Dobson was a very big promoter of him in the 70s and 80s. He is still around. He's still a Tea Party favorite. Glenn Beck said nice things about him. And his latest project was to republish a book called You Can Trust the Communists to Be Communist. Remember that one? By a guy named Dr. Fred Schwartz, featured in this magazine in 1961, whose big argument was that the communists used techniques of animal husbandry to kind of control the minds of their subjects, and that they were building a tunnel underneath from Mexico to California to invade with UN troops. And the punchline is that William F. Buckley blurbed Fred Schwartz's memoir and said what a great stalwart fighter against communism he was. And the fact is there are just so many more kind of continuities and discontinuities in the kind of rhetoric you see on the right, these kinds of anxieties, these kinds of paranoia, this kind of conspiracy theorizing. And, you know, the reasons for it are interesting to discuss. I have my theories. But the uncanniness of the continuities is what's striking to me. And I very rarely find something new, startling in what right-wingers say today. But there's a very important difference, and this is where we get into politics. The stuff that conservatives were saying was not being said on the front page of the New York Times. It wasn't being said on CNN. The fact of the matter is the control of the Republican Party by the conservatives, and the shifting media ideology of balance as the highest professional value and marker of fairness rather than truth, which licenses anything a conservative says in the name of the Republican Party as one pole of any debate, is entirely new. And this particular piece that I wrote about in Rolling Stone concluded, once we establish that, you know, we can draw strength from the fight. Conservatives aren't going away. They're a constitutive part of the American fabric, and they simply have to be beaten. You know, 51% beaten, not, you know, crushed beaten, not, you know, interned, you know, beaten. But then we get to the Democrats. Then we get to the Democrats' stupid part. I think I had a line in there about how, you know, you know, the media with their ideology of balance can be counted on to normalize this craziness, and Democrats can be counting on to compromise with it. And so we have two very different kind of cultures. I mean, it's not just two poles. It's qualitatively two different ways of thinking about the world, thinking about change, thinking about politics. And I don't know, maybe I can just set this up by talking about the contrast between the press conference that Ronald Reagan gave the day after the 1982 midterm elections compared to the press conference that Barack Obama gave the day after the 2010 midterm elections. I wrote about this one for Newsweek, although they hacked it up so much it was barely recognizable. Ronald Reagan, well, basically the economy was, unemployment was 9%. You know, the economy was much as it was on election day in 2010. And Ronald Reagan had, of course, you know, been trying to pursue Reaganism and tax cuts and all the rest. And they lost tons of seats. And people were saying it's not even possible for Reagan to consider, you know, being reelected. And he said in the press conference, his you know, smart centrist aides wrote this conciliatory statement for him to make, and he's like, tore it up. You know, he said, oh, well, you know, the only reason we lost so many seats was the Democrats cheated. You know, it was a really historically corrupt election by the Democrats, and we're going to stay the course. And even if he did this Reagan thing where he just kind of, like, you know, shuffled sort of historical ideas in this crazy way, and said, you know, really, if it was completely typical off your election, which it wasn't, and we're gonna stay the course. Right. This was the press conference where Barack Obama said, yeah, we had a shellacking, and the people want, you know, clearly think that the government has gone too far, and we're gonna listen to that. It's just, you know, just a striking contrast. And I remember laying out some of these ideas. Like I said, I've just been kind of riffing on them over and over again in an interview with Chris, actually, and in these times, right around, do you remember when that was? Maybe 2003 or something?
No, it was a little later than that. Yeah. It was 2005.
Okay. Yeah, and it was called
the Super Jumbo Book?
Yeah, it was called the case for a Democratic Marker. And the idea was, you know, Democrats are always thinking of the next election, which tends to involve kind of reaching out to the median voter, you know, getting 50% plus one, studying the polls assiduously, so that every time you win, you're simultaneously attenuating the brand. You know, you're making it mean less to be a Democrat. And practically speaking, you know, that's meant, you know, eating the seed corn, you know, betraying the basic fundamental appeal, the only thing that really works in defeating cultural conservatism and its appeals, its existential appeals to people's uncertainties, which is economic populism. You know, during and after the New Deal, when Democrats won election after election after election, frustrated Republicans had a saying, no one shoots Santa Claus, right? So Keynesianism was not only good policy, while it was good policy, It was also good politics because it redistributed wealth, gave people money, gave people security, gave people who weren't even really liberals and weren't even... The thing about the democratic message of economic populism when it was most firmly in place was, yes, it appealed to liberal folks like us who were pluralist cosmopolitans, but it also appealed to guys in the South Shore of Chicago who, you know, maybe beat their kids. You know, we're not necessarily cultural liberals. We're pretty traditional guys, right? So it's a great solvent for the appeals of cultural conservatism. And, of course, I don't need to tell this audience, that's been retreating from the Democratic message, you know, ever really since the early to mid-70s, such that... you know, when you tell a young person, you know, why aren't you a Democrat? I wrote a piece about this, why young people who are progressive are not willing to identify themselves as Democrats. And you tell them, well, what about this history that the Democratic Party has, you know, marching alongside Martin Luther King and Cesar Chavez? You know, you're really talking about ancient history to these folks.
Nation Conversations is a product of The Nation magazine and is available on iTunes. You can hear more podcasts at thenation.com/audio. Thanks for listening.